Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on yet another episode of Face to Face Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, just one of your hosts. We also have another co-host, which we will introduce momentarily, but before we introduce him, we're going to introduce today's guest. Each one has a different story, a different mission, something that they're passionate about, but before I go ahead and introduce the guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go ahead and share the show. I'm sure someone somewhere wants to hear this conversation as well, because on Face to Face Talk Show, what we do is ask the hard questions and have the uncomfortable conversations about race relations, politics, religion, health, what's going on in America. So let me go ahead and introduce our first guest. And the reason I wanted to have this guest on the show is for a very personal reason. I am currently running for California State Senate in the 2022 election, which I just announced this week. I'm very excited, yet very tired. And it's a very weird position to be in. So I felt, you know what? I need a therapist. I need somebody I could talk to, somebody who could make sure my mind was right. So I said, let me grab my girl, Raylene Taylor, on the show to help me stay sane. Good morning, Raylene. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Hi, guys. My name is Raylene Taylor. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I am passionate about mental health and wellness.
That's wonderful. Are you going to help keep me sane? I think that's the question that everyone wants to know.
I got you.
Okay, so we're going to have some hard conversations, some uncomfortable conversations today. So I want to make sure you're there to help us from a mental health perspective.
Yes, I got all of you guys. I got you.
Okay, so we start going too far, let us know. So I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And I'm going to tell you honestly, I'm a very sensitive, emotional person. The people who know me know that when I find good people, I just love to hold on to them. And our next guest, we haven't been able to see for a couple of weeks, but he's joining us here today, Mr. Lamont Harrison. Good morning, Lamont. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. Glad to be back. My name is Lamont Harrison. My wife, Katrina, and I, we created what is the Lens app, which is Law Enforcement Interaction Notification System. We created an app which will enable subscribers to rate and report their police officer experience. And we did it as a way to create that national database that people keep saying we need to track police officers, and they couldn't seem to figure it out. So a school teacher and an IRS worker did it for them.
That's wonderful. I definitely want to talk about that. But I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Mr. Salim Amir Bey, who's here with us just about every week. And he is a Constitution specialist. Good morning, Salim. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. My passion is the Constitution, but I love food. I love music. I've been a part of that for a long time. But now I'm along with the Constitution, doing like my brother Anthony, I'm helping my people be mental recovery with the amnesia that we have going on with the stories that have been told. So,
amnesia. When you say amnesia, Salim, what does that mean?
We're asleep. We're walking around asleep. We don't remember nothing. We don't remember we're kings and queens. We don't remember Big Mama. And I mean, we don't even remember when the TV used to turn off at 2 a.m. So I'm just helping people try to get that stuff back, man. You know.
Okay, well, we're going to help as well. So I want to introduce our next guest, Mr. Cornelius Maxwell. Good morning, Cornelius. How are you?
I'm good. Yourself, how you doing?
I'm excited. I'm excited to have you here. I'm excited to learn about what you have going on. So talk to me. What are you passionate about?
All right. Well, I'm a U.S. Army veteran. I served 3 tours in Iraq. I'm an advocate, public speaker, and I'm the author of this book here called Unapologetically, I'm a Man. And what I'm doing here is I'm inspiring the Black community to become more involved politically and let them know that you have a place politically and we have birthrights to do so. And so currently the book's been out since Juneteenth. I released it on Juneteenth, and it's been ranked on Amazon's top 107 categories. And an online book club is nominated for Book of the Year as well. So my passion right now is advocacy and getting the message out that, you know, that politics is not just a white thing, is what I hear a lot of. It's a white thing, it's not a Black thing, and it's not your place as being Black to be involved in politics. And so I'm letting them know that we all have a place and it's all our role. So thank you.
You are so welcome. I definitely have to. So do you think this is a good time for me to run for Senate?
I believe so. I believe so. Because, you know, the election, the presidential election just ended, you know, or still going through its process. But, you know, everyone is putting their vote. So that part is done. So to start preparing for the next elections is, you know, especially with the race issues, I think now is a perfect timing because we just can't drop the ball. You know, the message has been getting out there, systemic racism, then we need to start working on it. So, and I have a 5-phase plan. I believe that can also do that, which I talk about in the book, but it's also, but the book is mostly poetry, but it's based around my 5-phase plan. So in depth in that.
We're definitely going to talk about that. I also want to introduce our next guest who is here with us every week. He is passionate about helping people with financial literacy. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very good. How are you?
I'm excited to be here. I just announced my run for California State Senate.
Love it. Love it. That's
good. Thank you. Thank you. What are you passionate about, Richard?
You know, I'm passionate about helping people. That's like in my heart. That's the crusade. I'm passionate about getting people better. I have a saying that if you meet me, I'm going to leave you a better person.
I met you and I think I'm a better person. I'm going to come back to you, Richard. I want to introduce my next guest, Ms. Samantina Zina. Good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning. I'm well. My name is Samantina Zidan, as you mentioned. I am an actress and also a mental health advocate. And I am also a speaker. I speak mostly about mental health also because it's just one of those things that a lot of people do avoid. And I feel like we need to keep talking about it until it's comfortable for everybody. And I'm currently writing my own autobiography.
You're writing an autobiography?
Yes.
You look like 12. How do you write an autobiography at 12?
I'm 30.
Look at that. You looking good. I'm like, wow, what have you experienced? I'm gonna come back to you. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. We have the fabulous Debbie here with us this morning. Good morning, Debbie. What are you passionate about?
Good morning. Actually, I'm a registered nurse here in New Jersey. I also have a undergraduate in Bachelor's of Science in Criminal Justice Administration. I own NJ Weedman's Joint in Trenton, New Jersey. And what I'm passionate about now is this so-called legalization in New Jersey. Making it just and fair for everyone because too many people are excluded. And the victims that were targeted and victimized by the racist war on drugs are just not getting what they deserve and their reparations for, you know, all their suffering. So that's, I actually started at change.org to force my way into the legal cannabis industry because, you know, we've all been smoking weed in New Jersey and it wasn't legal until what, a month ago. So we've been getting it from someplace. So those people that have suffered need to get their fair share.
Yeah, I understand completely. When you said reparations, one of my favorite words, I want to introduce Mr. David Raglan. What are you passionate about, David?
I'm definitely passionate about reparations, and I'm glad that you mentioned that. I think that Black folks are owed reparations for slavery and the world that it created. And the world that it created involves the criminal justice system that you were just talking about. I also think that people are saying, you know, Black folk need healing. We do, but part of that healing requires like a feeling of safety and security, which comes through economic security. And I think that's connected to our healing as well as the actual healing from things like medical apartheid, miseducation in history, which some of your other guests have talked about. So I think that reparations is the process that could bring healing to this entire country because this country is full of, I think, what is this deep rooted sin from the very beginning of its founding. And until that healing takes place, we won't go anywhere.
Yes, thank you for that, David. I want to go ahead and bring on my co-host, Mr. Paul Foss. We have some excellent guests today. What do you think, Paul?
I love it, I love it, I love it. I love new guests. Unfortunately, with so many guests, that's about it for the show. Thanks for coming, we're out of time. I'm excited to have everybody. I'm excited to learn from more people. I am passionate about a million things, as you know, but when you asked me to do this show with you, I have become passionate about, you know, I think that in life I tend to, you know, I've looked at myself as a leader, maybe as an influencer with my friends and people. And now through the show, I've realized that I could actually become an influencer, a leader in understanding some of Black America, African-American America, and, you know, systemic racism, issues that I've never been aware of, didn't take the time to learn about. Maybe I did this on purpose. Maybe I grew up that way. And it's not good enough for me just to listen. I actually believe that I have a voice and can go out and get other people to start paying attention, because just protesting, just marching, just voting isn't good enough. We need the other people who are ignoring the issues to start learning. Doesn't mean we have to agree about everything, but I find it important to have the conversations and learn and try and understand what I can't possibly know. So that's why I love showing up every week and being schooled and trying to get better, and then trying to spread the message to others who I think it's the only way we make a difference.
Now, have your thoughts changed in reference to systematic racism since hosting the show?
Oh, 100%. I mean, if you had asked me when you and I first met, is there systemic racism? I would have said, no, I don't see it. I don't see any policy or anything that's systemic. And then from being on the show and watching and reading some of the things I've been asked to read and conversations I've had, you know, I don't want to put a word on it. Is it systemic? Is it this? Is it that? Is there racism? 100%. Was it built into our systems from the beginning, as Lamont and Sir Salim have taught me? 100%. Is it still out there? Yes. What can I do about it is the stuff that I have to really figure out. And then there's other parts that you could take out the word systemic. You could take out the word institutionalized, whatever words, it doesn't matter. The fact is, when I get pulled over or when my son gets pulled over, I don't worry about an officer drawing a gun on him. When I walk into a high-end store, I don't worry about how I'm looked at. So you can put any word you want with it. If you don't believe there's differences, then you don't want to believe there's differences. And maybe I just grew up and, you know, not exposed to it. So being on the show with the awesome guests we have and yourself, I've been able to learn a lot and then go actually read and watch and say, wait a minute, Paul, there's stuff going on here that you need to be aware of. And then aware is like getting to the starting line. Aware is great, but if I don't do anything with it, then I haven't really done much. I need
let's,
to go.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Lamont, you have some thoughts?
I mean, for me, like I always say, it's easy when you look for it to see the systematic flaws that caused racism to continue to run rampant for well over 400 years now. And you can see how intentional it was, because like Salim will tell you, with the Constitution, you asked people to write a document to supposedly include everybody, when at that point, some of the people to be included was still property and seen as less than animals. So you can't repair that sticking in an amendment for them, an amendment for women, an amendment for this. You have to go back and fix it from top down, or else you can't get rid of all of the interwoven pieces that are in our educational system, that are in our criminal justice system. And real quick, yesterday we're teaching on the chapter Policing's Introduction to America. So of course you know about the slavery control patrols, and then you know about the watchmen patrols, things of that nature. So it has always been off for African Americans in this country when it comes to policing, and then factor in the fact that they weren't allowed to be educated. So you're going to have flaws in the educational system, and then all the structures that was created, like with the projects and everything, to keep poor people in a poor mentality. That's all systematic, and it's hard to believe it wasn't intentional by the powers that be to keep a stronghold on the African American community.
Absolutely. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's still happening now. I live in New York, and I apply for, like, they have this thing called lottery apartments. I apply for them. If it's in a nice neighborhood, they'll tell me, oh, we picked your number, but we don't have anything available. But if it's somewhere in the hood somewhere, I will literally get called the next day. And so earlier last week, they emailed me about this nice apartment, this nice luxurious apartment, and they told me the same thing. You know, we called your number, but we don't have anything available because you don't make $100,000 per year. So then I send them a nice email, and I'm like, it's interesting how when it's in a bad neighborhood, I get called right away. But every time it's in somewhere luxurious, I'm never like, you called my name, my number came up, but I'm not, I can't move into that apartment. And I'm like, this is exactly why this country is the way it is, because New York is supposed to be a democratic state. Everybody want to, you know, be happy that Democrat won as the first Black woman or whatever in the White House. But the reality is there's still a lot of racism. And that's the perfect example. They think like, if you're Black, if you don't make a certain amount of money, they assume you're not educated. You belong in the hood somewhere. There are a lot of people with college degrees that don't make $100,000 a year. The average American lived off like $40,000, $50,000. So you telling me I can't live in a nice neighborhood because I don't make that much money?
Yeah.
Yeah, I see you're passionate about it.
I was also gonna say, you know, going along, you know, with what I opened up with in that point, if you don't think that there's still racism and that Blacks and whites are looked at differently, forget all the Constitution. I don't mean that, Salim. Forget the police. Forget everything you want to talk about. If you watch the football game, I think it was Monday Night Football, it had to be mentioned a dozen or two times that it was the first time in NFL history we had a game that was refereed by all Black referees. Like, why, if there's no racism, why would we have to point that out? They don't say, hey, look, here's a game with all old white dudes. We have to specifically point out and celebrate that 5 or 6 or 7 qualified referees happen to be a skin color, to celebrate it, because there is a difference and it's the first time it's ever happened. Or we have to celebrate, which we should, the first time a woman was appointed to be the GM of a baseball team. The day that racism and sexism doesn't exist is when we no longer have to point these things out. They're just the norm. So. Right.
You know, I think that the day that racism and sexism doesn't exist is the day that we challenge capitalism, because capitalism is racial capitalism. Capitalism was created to contain racism.
Yes.
Can you explain that more? Could you just educate me?
Sure. So you got to understand that Black people were brought here for economic purposes. It was the original inputs into our system. Not only was it the original inputs into our system, but there's a scholar who wrote the book Founding Brothers, Joseph Ellis, and he has a chapter in the book called Silence. And in that chapter, he describes how there was rigorous debate in the Constitutional Congress about slavery, because, you know, they're talking about revolution and liberty and all of this stuff. And so how are you gonna have slaves if you're making a revolution? That don't make no sense. And if you're talking about liberty. And so what they essentially did was they had the people who were writing about the proceedings of the Constitutional Congress agree to keep silence about the debate around slavery until the first generation of founders had died. And that was intentional, because they wanted Blackness to seem three-fifths of a human being?
Three-fifths of a person.
To seem like it was a normal thing, and that to be Black meant to lose. So Blackness was built into the system as something that we could be owned, but we couldn't own, right?
Now that, not to interrupt you, but that's exactly what's going on in New Jersey with this new cannabis market. So people of color that were targeted by unjust laws that were targeted at people of color, and now they're felons. So now they say, you can't be in the cannabis industry, you can't own anything because you're a felon. But yet those laws were targeted at people of color to make you a felon. So they don't have to say, you can't be in here because you're a person of color. Now they say, you can't be in there because you're a felon. So all those people that basically built that industry and you know, have been in prison and have suffered, the neighborhoods have suffered, the families have suffered, you know, they've been targeted. And I go back to that old laws that were put in. What's the difference between cocaine and crack cocaine? crack cocaine was an inner city problem. Cocaine you used at Studio 54 and rich white guys did it. But those penalties were so different, and because they targeted people to keep them out of public housing, to keep them out of here, to keep them out of there. And now they're being kept out of the new emerging multi-billion dollar cannabis industry that only seven white people seem to be able to benefit from, where all the victims are still being victimized. So that's what I'm fighting against, because my partner is a felon. And we can't even apply because he's a felon, but it was targeted that way. So I don't have to say, you can't be in the cannabis industry because you're a black man. I could just say, oh, no felons. So then people are like, oh, no, it's not racist. It's not racist. You're a felon. It is. But they don't
I agree with you, Debbie, but I also wanted to just make a blanket statement, is that that's a situation that occurs in America on a multitude of different issues, yes, where they don't say it's not because you're black, yes, it's not because you're a black female, it's because of you're a felon, because you're a criminal, because yeah, that's exactly, what happened after.
Exactly.
And that was the whole thing with the 13th Amendment. Lamont, you were going to say something?
Yeah, two things. And the person she's talking about, because we watched a documentary on it. We pay attention to the cannabis legalization here too. And we was watching a documentary. I think his name is Boehner, Jeff Boehner or whatever. When he was in DC, he shot down legalization 8 years in a row. Soon as he left office, that man now has over 2,000 marijuana license, and he's the one that's making all the money off the cannabis. Yep. He's in charge of that big organization she's talking about. It's Jeff Boehner.
Yes, Cornelius. Go ahead, Sully. People won't look at you
because you're black. You complete the same infraction as somebody else, you might get a little. But when you walk into that courtroom, those 310 judges that just got appointed recently, you're going to get hit with a felony because of what you look like, as opposed to, we understand you messed up.
Exactly. And
we're in a bad situation. Let's get you some therapy. No, we're going to throw you under the jail because that's what we've always done.
And that's the problem.
Now, let me jump in there real quick as well, because is one thing is, and this is why I'm going to jump in, because we're talking about, you know, the whole American system that created to keep the black man down and to keep us with a slave mentality. And we still have that slave mentality, because the first thing we realize is we don't have a place in politics. And this is my message I've been teaching. And I've been saying this within my five-phase plan, is the first thing we need to do is to develop political influence. Because every country has political influence. You have political influence that determines your laws, determines your economic stability, all these things. So the first thing we've never had is fair representation politically. So we developed a political representation, you know, fair representation. We're able to be involved in every aspect of politics, the local, the state, the federal level. On top of that, you can be behind the scenes as the kingmakers and things of that nature, right? The aides, the chief of staffs, the donors, you know, we're able to take the government system that's been designed against us and use it into our advantage, right? And from there, the next step, I say, once we get the political influence, our next influence is to create economic stability, right? Invest in the small business owners in the black community. And with more grants like the SBA program, I've written grants and how my mother is an artist. She's an artist. Her business is an SBA program. So, you know, I'm saying this because I'm doing this myself. You know what I mean? So if you can develop the economic stability by, you know, taking those grants, those loans, and investing in the communities and create jobs in the communities, right?
Okay, hold on 1 minute, Cornelius, hold on 1 minute, because I like those first two points. I definitely want to talk to them. We had a couple of people talking at once. So I want to go over to Salim. I know Salim been waiting patiently to say something.
Well, I love what everybody is saying, and I really do agree with a lot of it. But it's two things that we're missing out, all right? So I understand the economic, I understand getting everybody together, but one thing we need to stop doing is calling each other black. Black is a color. Black is a shade. We're not crayons. So we need to get this thing called a nationality. There has been no reparations that's ever been paid in the world unless the person had a nationality. So that's the one thing that we have to do. The second thing is probably like a two-part thing. One, excuse my language, but we got to get rid of the nigger problem. All right. What I mean by that is
that, do explain that one.
We got to stop putting everybody in a box. You know, we wouldn't look at Europe. When you look at Europe, you see a bunch of countries. You think of a bunch of countries. When you think of Africa, you think of jungles, one land, people running around with bones in their nose, huts. You think of a degradative thing. Why? Because for the past, what, 1,000 years that we've been assimilated into a Euro society as they've come up from Rome, Greco, or whatever like that. Black has always been a connotative language. It's always been negative. And this is the stuff that we attach ourselves to. We've been so hurt and so downtrodden that anything that makes us feel good, we naturally go to it. So we always look at racism like it's an event, not a system. We look at everybody else's problems, except for our own. We're quick to point out everybody else's problem. We ain't quick to point out our own. So what is it that we need to do is have that conversation realistically with ourselves, get the information that we need to get to, but we need to deal with it accordingly and stop putting all Black people in one box, period. I mean, the Constitution does a lot of things. It does. And if you want to read it from the U.S. Code or the literal print, it does. It says in Article 1, Section, I think it's like Section 4 or Section 9, that we're still 3/5 of a human being that has not been anywhere. The Black codes that was in the South, they have never been repealed. And we got to start telling the truth about our presidents and our people. Now, the thing is about a felon and the Constitution is the 13th Amendment. And this is the reason why my fellow people in New York and New Jersey, you know, I'm from the East Coast as well, felons are not protected in the Constitution. Why? Because slavery is emancipated unless what? In the prison system. So we disregard anything, but that same problem with the nigger problem is a label problem. We treat people according to the label that we manifest on this person. So if we say you're a drunk, we're gonna treat you as a drunk. If we say that you're a sexist or a racist, we're gonna treat you as that. But Black has no positive value. And when we look at people, when we call it ourselves Black and Black is beautiful, Black is proud, Black is all this, Black is death. Black is stagnant in law. So why would we claim ourselves to something that somebody else has given us? We're a newbie.
Deep question. I want to expand on that. Salim, Samantina, you've been waiting to speak.
No. I was listening. Basically, what I was going to say is it goes right back to mental slavery, because how are you going to treat somebody, like, basically, if somebody get arrested for weed, they can't even, you make it seem like they don't even have a place in society, as if weed is such a big thing. When in Jamaica, it's everybody smoking weed. In the island, everybody's smoking weed. But here, if you get caught with it, you get so punished. It's almost like you're not allowed to make mistakes. That's what that means. You don't have a place in society because over weed. And it just doesn't make sense. And that's the kind of thing that you know, frustrate people, because it's like, to me, that's being a predator. You abusing somebody over a small mistake. Like, are we not all human beings? Don't you ever make mistakes in your life? If somebody kills somebody, that's a different story. But over weed, somebody should still be able to get a job. But they act like if you have a felony, since that's what they're calling it, you're not even a part of the society. You don't have the right to vote. They take away all of your rights. And that's not fair.
That's done.
I wanted to go back to Salem's comment, because I do believe that it's a global issue, right? With Blackness and the negativity that is surrounding Blackness. But I also want to look at it as an individual problem or individual concern, because there's so many stigmas surrounding Blackness. There's so many stigmas around what you do and what you don't do, what you're capable of and what you're not capable of. If I spoke as a therapist, a Black Latina therapist, and I'm talking about mental health, do you know how many people will tell me, oh, I don't do that, that's white people, mm-hmm. right? So I think we go back to those places of normalizing certain things that are needed. And
I just want to cut you off, because that's what I do. I want to go back. When mm-hmm. you said, were you saying that when you're discussing therapy, that Black people will say, I don't do therapy because therapy is for white people?
I'm saying, I've heard those comments. I'm not saying that that's a Black discussion, but I have heard those comments. Or I've heard, you know what? I don't want just any therapist. I want a therapist that look like me, which field, there's not many. You know, we are now, just now, because it's trending, talking about mental health. We are just now talking about, you know, the problems that are surfacing in our country systemically, but it has been going on and it has been swept under the rug. It hasn't been talked about because, as Paul discussed, nobody wants to talk about their biases. Nobody wants to talk about their uglies, right? Because if you live in a world where everything is perfect for you, then you want to keep that bubble perfect. You don't want to talk about what's going around the corner. You, I live in LA. We don't want to talk about Santa Monica, where you have the have and have nots that's just across the street from each other. So nobody wants to look outside and see that homeless person that's right outside their door when they're living in a $4 million home.
Yes, excellent point. Now, what I'm seeing right now, great show. If you're just now tuning in, wonderful conversation. Please go ahead and share the show. I'm seeing hands being raised. I have about 3 hands right now ready to go to have the conversation. So guests, please just be patient with me because I see all of you. I hear all of you. And we're having a great show. Paul, you've had your hand up.
Well, yeah, you know, look, I like to ask questions that are not to provoke, but the questions that you will hear white America talk about amongst themselves, but too afraid to ask in an open forum. So talk about Cornelius's point. We have him represented in politics. What are you talking about, Cornelius? We had a black president for 8 years. We got black Supreme Court judges. You know, we've got a black Veep now. So how are you saying you're not represented? Or somebody saying, well, it's a biased system, but like the argument I had last night, well, blacks commit more crimes. They have more interactions with the police. So of course they're going to be arrested more. These are the comments that people talk about when a bunch of white guys are talking about racism. They go, oh, they're still mad about slavery was 100 years ago. What are you talking about? You know, so let's talk about why just because you have a black president for 8 years doesn't mean access to politics. Just because, you know, Oprah Winfrey becomes one of the wealthiest celebrities in the world doesn't mean you have access to entertainment. Like these are, it's easy to talk about, right? And but people will never say this because they'll never challenge you on it. So look, I'm sharing this live on my page and I'm happy that my friends are going to watch this, but let's talk about that. Like
just better watch it, Paul.
Only doing something doesn't mean it's open to the world.
That's right. They better watch it because you've been helping them. I've been watching your posts that you've been changing the mindset of people. So they better recognize they can tune in to Face to Face and we can tell them exactly why they're wrong. I want to go over to Cornelius real quick. Cornelius, your thoughts?
Perfect. I love the fact that you asked me that question, Paul, because I've been answering that question. It's been in my books about it. And I've been doing podcasts about the same question. And the thing is like I said, we talk about the American system politically. Well, when you look at the slave system, you know, our people were taught the fact that you couldn't read and you couldn't be involved in politics. We were excluded from politics, right? Physically. So what does it do? It taught generations, hey, don't do that because for your safety, right? So now we still have that slave mentality, right? Because if you don't have political influence, you are a slave anyways, according to any custom in the history of mankind in politics. So when you have black people feel like that's not my place, we're not involved, you're already saying you're already a slave. Mentally, you're already a slave because you don't have political influence. You've never met a king who didn't have influence politically. When you talk about ancient Romans, in order for you to be a senator, you had to be a descendant of a fellow senator. So if we look at representation population-wise, our numbers don't match because, you know, you may have a total like 1 or 2 out of like 5,000 in a position, but you don't have it in a fair number, so it's not fair representation. And even when
we are seeing changes.
We're seeing changes, but it's still not complete.
More black, more women. We've had our first Muslims. We're moving a little bit. Are we heading the right way or is this just band-aid fixes? Is it not real? Salim, talk to me because I see you shaking your head at me.
It's not. It's, look, I've been in this skin color all my life, right? I've been around the United States, started in Virginia, New York, went to culinary school, did all that stuff. This system is designed that way, period. And I'm gonna give you a prime example, just something to think about, Paul. All right. When I do something, they'll say, "Oh, you get that from your father, you get that from your mother, right? That's genetic, right? This is how America is. That's genetic. We can spot out things that you did from your mother, things that you did from your father. But this is America. Wasn't our mothers raped by slave owners?" So when I talk about self-hate, when I talk about loathing, when I talk about all that, are they going to say, man, you probably got that from one of those slave owners that raped your mother? No, we don't do that. We never address problems. We like to put it to the side and read them little pretty verses in the Quran or the Bible and everything like that. Like when I pointed out that verse from Jesus in the 19th chapter of Luke, people can go in there and look at that. Jesus wasn't this mild-mannered person. But every time something happens, if you attack a Jewish man, the Jews coming after you. You attack a Chinese man, they're coming after you. Attack a Black man, what'd he tell you? You better pray. You better pray.
Interesting point.
So, I mean, we got to deal with it. America is running the way that it was supposed to, period.
Period. Salim has spoken. Lamont, what do you have to say to that?
Okay. For me, like you said, it was inbred in the very beginning. We have to make them weak as possible because you got to go back and figure out why they chose us as slaves anyway. Genetic disposition, the fact that we could endure high temperatures because we were from the hottest place on the planet, and we stood out. There was nothing that looked like us over here, so that man cannot leave now. He's now in physical bondage and mental bondage because he's in a place where he doesn't speak the language and he doesn't look like nobody there except for other people in his position. So then you roll that into what you were talking about where how racism is also capitalistic, and this comes to the point why the playing field will never be even. You see some Oprah slide through, you see a couple people slide through, it's piecemeal. You gotta let a couple people through to look like you're not doing what it is that you're really doing. Even when it came to the points with sports, long time Black people couldn't play sports. They saw how lucrative it was because one person took a chance and realized, oh, they're fast, they're strong, they're this, they're that. So now if you look at the game now, we're all over the game, except where it matters. We're not in ownership and there's not enough of us in coaching because they still act like we don't possess the intellectual ability to do the job. Black quarterback gets described by his athletic prowess, never his mental state. And then when you find one who's extremely strong mentally, they kiss his ass so much that it's obvious. So that's all structural. Even when we were talking about the newest Supreme Court lady, Comey Barrett, when she talked about her kids, she described her white kids as intelligent, this, that, and the third. Those Black kids she adopted, she used all physical attributes. Mm-hmm. Mentioned the weightlifting aspect. That has how it's always been in society. You're taught to look at Black as skills as opposed to intelligence. When you really sit down and think about it, there is not an invention known to man that there wasn't a Black apprentice up under him doing the exact work showing our intellectual ability, but we never get touted for that. Just few and far between. So you can't really level the playing field unless you start intentionally letting more of us in and showing what we're truly capable of, because there's nothing that we cannot do and we have proven it. You can't wake up without a Black invention. Not one, clock, refrigerator, car, nothing.
And we don't care. In regards to athleticism, I want to also point this out to the way the parents raise their kids, because I worked at a tutoring center and there were a lot of times the athletes would come to our school, to our center to get tutored. They didn't know how to read, but yet they were in the school basketball team. I was a resident assistant in college. Majority of the Black players never show up to class. And I'm thinking like, so first of all, you're here on a scholarship. Why are you not taking advantage of that? Number two, there's a strong possibility you may not make it to the NBA. How are you going to survive in the real world without a real education? Why are you skipping class? So I think that's something that really needs to be instilled in your kids' head, especially the boys specifically, because I noticed that a lot with the Black players. The white ones would show up, but the Black ones would be skipping. And obviously because the teachers, the professors were told to pass them in order for them to stay on the team. So they felt like, I didn't need to show up.
I think you mentioned a whole lot of different areas in that one. You know, everything that you said was valid, but I think there are a lot of different underlying issues in that same vein. I want to hear from David real quick, because David's been watching this show and he's been quiet. What are your thoughts, David?
I mean, I have a lot of thoughts. Like, you know, I want to go back to like the notion of Blackness is problematic. Black is beautiful. Black is one of the most deepest colors on the spectrum. Not just that, but, you know, if you look at nighttime, like in nighttime, colors show differently. So I do think, and also we have to understand, like, there's a history of Black people and organizers, like, using the concept of Black as a way to organize people across multiple perspectives, like Aimé Césaire in the Caribbean, or Negritude, or Leopold Singhar of Ivory Coast. So like, you know, it's okay to, I think it's okay to use different language. People may not like it. I mean, I think this is a deep conversation, and I think that, you know, what I'm really interested in is Black people getting to the point where it doesn't matter what white people think. Like, if we're talking about liberation, like, you know, and if we can, if you can wake up, which is true, you can wake up without, or you can't wake up without a Black invention. We really need to be thinking about what it is that we need to do to build for us. And I'm not saying separate, but I'm saying that there's a history, a continuous history of, you know, us being told that, like, oh, you gotta vote, oh, you gotta do this. And we do everything that we're supposed to do, and then we still get screwed by this system. When are we gonna learn that we are the only people who have to validate each other? You know,
interesting point. Richard, you've been quiet. You know, we've been talking about race, you know, race relations. What are your thoughts so far?
I just think there's so many thoughts roaming through my mind right now.
I can imagine.
And I think one of the things Salim brought up is, like, we got to stop using the word Black and see people as people, you know? And I think that, like, I was just talking to some agents in Arkansas before this meeting. I've never said the word Black, because I see them as just human beings. And for us, we gotta empower them and empower them to believe that they could do something. And it puts aside everything else that's going on. Like, everybody has an opportunity to go wake up every day and do something about it. Everybody has an opportunity to wake up every day and change the state of mind. Everybody has a different opportunity every day to say, by the way, I'm a minority too. So I was raised in a poor environment. So does that mean that I have to stay there? No, I wanted to change. And because I change, I know that I could give that feedback and change others. And I know there's a lot of issues going on, but I choose to say, no, let's move this way instead of everybody saying this way.
So, I hear you, Richard. I hear you. Now, this is my thing, not with you in particular, but you is that same, that energy seems to be in line with people who feel like, you know, we don't need reparations. You just need to move on. So it's a way of looking at where we are now. And we can move on, we can move forward, we can do all those things. But the root of reparations, even the word, is Latin, which means to repair. And that's what America is based on. When anything happens, like, you even just look at O.J. Simpson. If you can't get them in the criminal court, they always get them in the civil court. So because of the harm that America has done and America has admitted to in writing, in public, they have to repair the damage that they have done. So even though we can move forward now, we are moving forward in a way that other races have been able to do for years. So there has to be a way to even that playing field. That's my belief. That's my thoughts. But I want to hear from Cornelius.
All right. Perfect. And like I said, that's what I've been teaching, is that because it all boils down to birthrights, right? Every man has a birthright. And that's what I've been teaching with my five-phase plan. Like I said, number one has been, and I know we're running out of time, so I'm going to speed through the process. But like I said, the first phase of my plan is, of course, political influence, right? Because every man, no matter what you are, if you have political influence, you have control of the country. You can either be the one who controls the law or be controlled by the law. Number two, of course, economic stability. You have your own wealth, your businesses, jobs, and that market, which makes you taxable and pay taxes. Number three, you're able to develop your own education and healthcare systems, because those are paid by taxpayers according to American dollars, which is also sound economics. Number four is the home and land ownership. Because you're working, most people tend to work near where they live, or to live where they work. So then you're able to qualify for home and land ownership, which creates number five, steps one through four, gives you the birthright, right? Everyone has a birthright according to steps, plans one through four. You have your birthright as being your home and land ownership, your businesses, right? Your economic stability, your education, healthcare system, and as well political influence, which passes along birthright all the way across the board. And so that's what I've been proposing. This is what I've been teaching. And this way it eliminates just the whole concept of race altogether. It allows us to atone for what's gone on in America with everyone, like I said, with the opportunity of pushing your own birthright, one that's post the reputation that's been negative amongst our community. So we can eliminate those stigmas by eliminating the concept of our birthright, you know. And and I started talking about poems that talks about like death as our prophecy, to die at a young age and stuff like that. Well, those are considered birthrights. And what we have to determine our birthright is to be something that's more positive in alignment. It says, you know, I've seen reports that say 70% of homes don't have black fathers. Well, that's the case. That means you have 70% of homes that don't have birthrights, or they're entitled to who their identity are based upon their forefathers, right? We don't have the system of, well, that's the case. You can do this, you can do that, because you have that structure there. Well, we take that out because it's been incentivized. Well, take the man out the home, right? We'll cut you a check. So that incentivizes, which creates the friction within the home structure itself. So now it makes it hard to build a community when you don't have a community between mom and dad.
Yes, absolutely. I want to go over to Debbie real quick. Raylene, go ahead.
I was going to say, what I hear you saying as well is changing the narrative, right? Changing Correct. The narrative from the household forward, right? So mm-hmm. let's look at that. And when we are born, right, we already have those kind of narratives that will come without us even having to speak, having to be introduced to the world. I am a Afro-Latina. My mom is from Jalisco, Mexico. My dad is African-American. When I walk into the room, my Latina mother has always told me, when you walk into the room, people will see you as a black woman, no matter what. That's when you have to change that narrative and you have to let people know, no, I speak Spanish. No, I am Latina. What you see is not always what you get. So it's changing that narrative and changing that belief system within yourself so that you can exude that out into the atmosphere and in the world. And I believe that when we talk about systems and we all have the right to make our own way, I do believe too, the system is designed to have barriers put in place for different individuals. And so even me in my clinical training, there were moments where my counterparts had it so much more easier than me. I mean, in order to train, we had to completely quit our jobs and work a full-time 40-hour a week job with no pay. Now, for me, it was difficult. I had to make some decisions. Do I go on welfare? I'm a mom. I'm a widow mom. Do I go on welfare and make this happen? Because I don't have the father that can say, you go ahead and get your training and we'll pay, make sure you're okay in any other regards. So those are the barriers. Those are those unspoken, systematic things that will not allow individuals to move forward as easy as some of our counterparts.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we are now, thank you for that. We are now coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. And just let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Debbie.
Oh, okay. What I really want people to take away is that things need to be made equal. And I'm talking about the cannabis industry. It is not an equal playing field for people that are minorities. It isn't. So they need to get first dibs. They need to get lower application fees, and they need to be the people. Usually when there's a war and the war is won, you go back and you try to make whatever, you know, country, you try to make it better. You pour money in, and it's reparations. You try to make that, you know, area better. Like I said, the industry in New Jersey, it's not a level playing field, regardless of what people say. You might have a couple of people that maybe look like people of color, but they're not thinking like a minority that has been oppressed all this time. So I have a change.org. You can go to change.org, NJ Weedman's Joint. We've been there for 5 years. We've been vilified. We've been raided, we've been arrested. We have not been looked at as innovators like all these other 7 white men that came to New Jersey are being looked at, you know, bringing all this money. So like I said, it just needs to be equal for everyone. And if you look at me, I, you know, I can be in that industry. I can apply, but my partner cannot. So it needs to be level, equal for everybody. And some people just need a little bit of help because they've been oppressed for so long that they need that help.
Yes, I hear you. I hear you, Debbie. Sementina, what do you have for us?
I was going to say, in terms of like politics, I think we need to held these politicians accountable, because it just seems like before every election, they make all these promises, but then when they get in the White House, everything just go out the window. So I think we really need to start, you know, holding them accountable. And I actually did an interview about that last week. And I said, you know, Biden and Harris made a lot of promises. Let's not forget that. Let's not forget them because they're in the White House now. We need to really hold them accountable for them.
Absolutely. Raylene, what do you have for us?
I just want everyone to know that I am, you know, I'm passionate about mental health. I really feel like it's important to take care of our own individual selves before we can collectively take care of others. I am a strategist with dealing with individuals that are going through life transitions, whether that's divorce, whether that's loss, whether that's a change of lifestyle. I want to be that person that's right there in the midst of the pain of an individual that can let everyone know that you can move forward, you can do this, and collectively there is a support system out there. And I believe that it starts with one. So this conversation and the conversations we are having are important, not just for us, but it's important for our community. It's important for the world to see things in a different format and bring unity amongst us.
Say it starts with 10. So 10 of us here today. Is that my girl? Is that my girl, Katrina? Did she actually show up? I love you guys. I was so heartbroken.
Man, I miss you guys so much. You know, I work for IRS, so my job has me. Okay, thank you. Okay. they have me crazy, but I'm so glad to be back. I'm so glad to see all of you beautiful faces. Hi, Paul. I see you, Sharifa. You are dope. You're dope. I know that you're gonna rock this race out. I know you're gonna rock this race out. Oh, it's so good. I'm excited for you, man.
Thank you. I'm excited to see you. Final words from the two of you, from Lamont, from Katrina.
I mean, for me, we just experienced 150 million people voting in a presidential election. The country is about as divided as it has been since the Civil War. And I think this is a prime time, now that we know what's out there, now that people have put their views on their chest, on their social media pages, now it's time, like Paul always says, we gotta have these conversations to get over some of this stuff, see eye to eye. And I'm gonna say one quick thing on the blackness. Salim, I see where you're coming from with that, but being 6'3", 210 pounds, when I walk in the room, my blackness is the first thing you see, so I wear it as a badge of honor, because it's always been the thing that has separated us from mainstream society. So until we can love our blackness collectively, we can't expect them to not recognize it or appreciate or love it. So we have to do it first. So I see where you're coming from, but it's the first thing you see when we walk in the room, and that's why we was brought here, because we look that different. So I don't think you can eliminate it, but we do need to have a nationality sense, like you said, because none of us know where we come from.
Yes, yes. Coming down to the last few minutes of the show. Salim, what do you have for us? Salim, you going to talk to us?
Okay, there you go. So I'm going to be doing a podcast with Blog Talk Radio on the 30th. And my thing is about slavery. And because we need to start there first, there's been so many lies told about us creating out of the Africa myth, everything like that. I understand what we're all trying to do. And I'm not dismissing Black to say that Black is not beautiful. Black is not a culture. Black is not anything like that. But Black is dismissive and negateful. And I'm not going to believe what a stranger tells me. Nubian sounds better. King sounds better. Pharaoh sounds better. So when we think about those things, that's the part that we need a real viable solution to. And anybody can look me up on Facebook, Salim Amir Bey. I'm going to be on Blog Talk Radio. I can send out the links and everything like that. But I'm going to do a presentation on slavery that most people are not going to give you the information that I got.
Please put the link to the Blog Talk Radio in the comments on the face-to-face talk show page for this show. Cornelius?
Okay.
All right. Well, I want everyone to take away from this concept my five-phase plan, in which I believe we can provide birthrights for everyone. But like I said, the slavery concept is if you're a slave, you don't have the birthrights. You don't have the position to just determine the pride of your name because your name is given to you. You know, you don't have the position of determine your political concerns, right? That's going to determine your heirs for the long term. And you also don't have the assets to pass along. And so I want to end this podcast with my poem. Now, I said I was inspired by Dr. King's last protest. I am a man, and it's the one I titled the book, Unapologetically, I am a man. And it goes, I am made of bone, tissue, flesh, and blood, thus classified biologically to the mammal kingdom. Yet my stature is upright, and my posture is strong. It keeps me grounded through treacherous adversity. My voice is deep. When I speak, it roars with authority. Classification by pigmentation has labeled me a minority, restricted from health and prosperity, to quench the sinister desires of the majority. But let this declaration be understood with clarity, that I was created in the image of the Most High, uniquely with originality. So I can never be stereotyped due to the authenticity of my individual personality, because I'm proud to be the man God made me to be, unapologetically. And so that is unapologetically, I'm a man of Paul. And that's the concept of my book, is that we are all individuals. And so we need to determine our own birthright as an individual, even post the slavery mentality and the post-slavery system and concept. And this is what I've been sharing. This is the word that I want to get out, that we all have a birthright, and it's all our birthrights to pass it along to our heirs. And
yes, thank you.
On the five-phase plan.
So thank you. I love it. I see Sementina over there giving you some snaps, enjoying what you had to say. Richard, what you got for us?
So what I wanted people to take away from this is just like everybody taking a little bit about everybody, like the unity, love, I think 100%, but changing the system and changing the narrative. You know, we here as a as minorities, we get to choose, what we're doing is changing the narrative, changing the mindset. And I think that together, right now, this is 10 or 12, and the next thing will be 100, the next thing will be 1,000, next thing will be a movement. So we get to choose the narrative. I choose my narrative because birthrights weren't instilled in my family, but guess what? I'm going to go freaking get them. Nobody's going to take that away from me. So I'm going to go execute birthrights, and I'm going to go transfer birthrights, because that's so deep. I appreciate that Cornelius. That's my takeaway from that. And
Yes. Thank you, Richard. David.
Yeah, I just want to say thank you for having me, and check out the website for the reparations campaign that I work on, grassrootsreparations.org. And, you know, I think that I agree with what a lot was said, and that, you know, this is a really extraordinary moment, right? COVID has like really forced people to stop and slow down. And I think it's time to take stock. Like, and you know, what I imagine is that like this goes beyond Republican Democratic politics. Like, could you imagine every community in our country telling the truth about what happened as an inventory, and that we can realign our political systems based on what people's lived experiences are? You know, this is a really important time. We've never had a moment in all of the like traumatic and violent episodes and prolonged experiences that this whole country has went through to actually face up to this history that we're still living. And I think if we could, you know, have some kind of process that leads to repair, reparations, I think that that could go a long way toward healing sort of this
healing.
This injustice and yes. The continued indignities that Black folks face.
Yes, I definitely agree. Paul, what do you have for us? Go ahead, take us out.
What do I have for you? Look, this is streaming live on my page. And for my friends, if you have questions, please ask them. If You want to comment, comment. If you disagree, that's okay. To disagree, come on and talk to us. What I would encourage you to do is forget right and wrong. Forget trying to be right or worrying about being wrong. Come open, come willing to learn. And for those of you who might have passion or knowledge on this subject, give a little slack to those who are coming and trying to learn. And don't get mad if they don't understand at first. Don't get mad if they disagree. People like me coming with 50 years of partial education or something. So if I come and I go, well, I'm not so sure about that, cut me some slack and allow me the time to break the calluses and try and learn. But I love that everyone's coming. I love that the audience is growing. I think we are making a difference, and we're going to keep moving forward. I love all of you. And thank you so much for helping teach me.
You are so welcome. Thank you for being open to learn, for showing up every week, willing to have this conversation, not like you said, worrying about being right or being wrong, but just simply being here. And I think that's the most important thing. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on today's episode of Face to Face Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. But like Paul said, please don't just watch the show, join the conversation. If you have questions, comments, sit down. Let's talk about it, because what? Change starts with a conversation. So if you want to be a guest, please visit the website at asharifa.com. Until next week, Wednesday, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, everyone have a safe, a blessed, and a happy Thanksgiving to everyone. Bye now.
Bye, guys.